Good morning, Mendocino. This is Jeff Blankfort, wishing you a very happy new year and welcoming you to the January 12th edition of Takes on the World, now kicking off its 11th year on KZYX and Z, and coming your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month, every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners. Last Friday, the ever-expanding middle finger that President Obama has extended to the millions who supported him in 2008 grew even larger when he proudly announced that Wall Street banker and corporate executive William Daley would replace Rahm Emanuel as his White House chief of staff, and that Gene Sperling, another Goldman Sachs top executive, would replace Larry Summers as his chief economic advisor. The message to the nation's unions and to the millions of Americans unemployed contained in those appointments could not have been further from the policies of an earlier Democratic Party president, Franklin Roosevelt, when faced with an army of Americans out of work three quarters of a century ago. The unions themselves are also a far cry from what they were in the 30s, and they have also played a role in producing a crisis in American labor that appears certain to get worse during the next 2 years of Obama's presidency. To talk about the situation facing American workers today, how they got to this point, and their prospects for the future is what I'm going to be talking about today with Kim Sipes, a professor of sociology at Purdue University's North Central Indiana campus, a former trade unionist himself, and an old friend. That will be about 20 minutes past the hour, and before we get there, let's take a look at some other things that have been happening, related and unrelated. First, some breaking news. While Lebanon's Prime Minister Saad Hariri is in Washington, meeting with Hillary Clinton and presumably President Obama, Lebanon's national unity government has collapsed and he is out of a job. 11 Hezbollah and Christian ministers resigned today in the face of the prospect that a U.S.-backed and funded and historically unprecedented U.N. tribunal investigating the assassination of his father, former Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri, will indict elements of Hezbollah for the attack. Hezbollah claims that it is proof that it was the Israelis who were behind the bombing that killed the senior Hariri in February 2005. In recent months, the Lebanese army has arrested numerous Lebanese who it has accused of being agents for Israel. Israel and its U.S. backers have been looking for an excuse to launch another war in Lebanon, and this may be it. Well, we've heard a lot of nonsense and less sense about the tragic attack on Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords and the murder of six others in Tucson on Saturday. There was always an understandable period of shock when some American loony, armed to his desire by a gun-crazed culture whose greatest export is massive violence and the weapons to produce it elsewhere, as we've seen in Lebanon, opens up with guns blazing in a schoolyard or a shopping center or a courthouse or a post office and murders his fellow citizens. It seems somehow like a violation of the rules, it being only okay when an American in uniform following orders does it in a far-off land that most Americans couldn't find on the map and tolerate it, if not condone, when the killer is wearing a police uniform and his victim is black or brown. If both the killer and the killed are black or brown, we pay no attention at all. It is in that context that what happened in Tucson on Saturday needs, in my opinion, to be viewed. While Julian Assange, of WikiLeaks fame, seems to have vanished from the headlines, and while Attorney General Holder and his allies in the U.S. Congress are trying to find a way to get him in their clutches, the young man admittedly responsible for downloading and sending the 250,000-plus cables to Assange, Private Bradley Manning, has been held in 23-hour-a-day solitary confinement at a Marine Brig in Quantico, Virginia, for more than 7 months, denied sunlight, exercise, possessions, and all but the most limited contact with family and friends. If he is found to be sleeping in the cell from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m., he is rudely awakened. If this was happening to a political prisoner in Iran, China, Russia, or Cuba, it would be the front page of all our newspapers, reported on NPR and on all the real and fake new TV news programs, and his or her name would be spoken of with fulsome praise by the president and half the demagogues in Congress. Bradley Manning's treatment is getting some attention in the alternative media, but what about the tens of thousands of others who are languishing in solitary confinement in U.S. prisons and jails? According to available data compiled by the website Solidarity Watch, There are some 25,000 inmates in long-term isolation in the nation's supermax prisons, and as many as 80,000 more in solitary and other facilities. Where is the outrage, asked James Ridgway of Solitary Watch, even among progressives, for these forgotten souls? And where, for that matter, is some acknowledgement of their existence? As for WikiLeaks, Often posted Norway's largest newspaper reported last month that it is all the 250,000 plus secret U.S. diplomatic cables that were obtained by WikiLeaks and has begun publishing articles based on these documents while not reproducing the documents and the cables themselves. One of the cables from the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv to the State Department in Washington made it clear, and this is 2009, that Israel's preparation for another major war in the region had the full support of visiting members of the U.S. Congress, Democratic and Republican. The cable described a meeting between the visiting American delegation headed by former Democratic Representative Ike Skelton, the head of the House Armed Services Committee, who was defeated for re-election last November, and Lieutenant General Gabi Ashkenazi, the Israeli Chief of Staff, which took place on November 15th of 2009. A second cable details a briefing given by Israeli generals to another delegation led by U.S. Senator and New York Democrat Kirsten Gillibrand on September 2nd and 3rd of the same year. The cables, a Norwegian paper reported, send a quote-unquote clear message that the Israeli military preparations for a new war in the Middle East are in full swing. General Ashkenazi is quoted in the November 2009 cable as saying that the Israeli military is preparing to wage the next war, quote, in the same areas where the previous wars took place, namely in Lebanon and the Gaza Strip, end quote. He told the visiting members of the U.S. Congress, quote, I'm preparing the Israeli army for a major war, since it is easier to scale down to a smaller operation than to do the opposite, end quote. The Israeli chief of staff confided to the U.S. delegation that the Israeli military is continuously flying unmanned drone aircraft over Lebanon in open contempt for the country's sovereignty to identify targets for attack. I should also say that Hezbollah had pictures of the drones flying over Beirut at the time Ravik Hariri was assassinated. Ashkenazi also expressed his gratitude to the U.S. National Security Agency, the NSA, for its aid in spying on Israel's enemies. The cable also quotes Ashkenazi as telling a U.S. representative that in the next war, Israel cannot accept any restrictions on conducting warfare in urban areas. He apparently was warning that its conduct would be even more savage than in the waging of Operation Cast Lead, the three-week Israeli invasion of Gaza in 2008-2009. That operation claimed over the lives of over 1,400 Palestinians, including more than 900 civilians, more than half of them women and children. Ashkenazi assured the Congress members that while, quote, mistakes may have been made, the Israeli military never intentionally targeted civilians. The New York Times also has these cables, as does the Guardian of London, Der Spiegel, and El Pais, but none has yet seen fit to report on them. In the meantime, there's a growing worldwide disgust with the failure of the Obama administration to put pressure on Israel to actually resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the thumb that Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu keeps sticking in the eye of the world, not just that of Washington. On Friday, Chile became the fifth Latin American country in the last month to recognize a Palestinian state. It followed recognition of Palestinian statehood by Brazil, Argentina, Bolivia, and Ecuador. Uruguay was expected to make a similar declaration in the coming weeks. One unnamed Israeli official told the Jerusalem Post that he feared that the trend of such recognitions would now seem, quote-unquote, irresistible to other Latin American countries. He added he believed that most, if not all, Latin American countries would recognize a Palestinian state by the time a summit of Latin American and Arab countries is held in mid-February in Peru. At the same time, European Union envoys in the Middle East are urging Brussels to treat East Jerusalem as the future capital of a Palestinian state. The recommendation comes in a leaked report by the heads of 25 European missions in Jerusalem and Ramallah. The report also calls for EU presence at the demolitions of Palestinian homes and intervention when peaceful protesters face arrest. The document follows the razing of the Shepherd Hotel, an East Jerusalem hotel, to make way for 20 homes for Jewish settlers. The destruction of the Shepherd Hotel has angered Palestinians who want East Jerusalem as the capital of their future state. While both the U.S. and the EU have condemned the demolition, the EU's Catherine Ashton did it far more forcefully than did our timid Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She said, I strongly condemn this morning's demolition of the Shepherd Hotel and the planned construction of a new illegal settlement. I reiterate, she added, that settlements are illegal under international law, undermine trust between the parties, and constitute an obstacle to peace, end quote. Those are words that neither President Obama nor Secretary of State Clinton have the guts to say. The leaked report recommended that EU officials and politicians should refuse to visit Israeli government offices or facilities located in occupied East Jerusalem, that Israeli settlers who forcibly move into Palestinian areas of Jerusalem be refused entry into EU countries, and that there be an EU boycott of Israeli products from East Jerusalem. The EU is far and away Israel's largest trading partner, and it is suspected that the leaking of this report is designed to spur the Israeli government into coming to its senses. If the pass is prologue, that's not likely. The Israelis are counting on the U.S. to once again block a UN Security Council resolution condemning Israeli settlements, and the Palestinians are unwilling, unfortunately, to have it introduced if the U.S. is going to veto it. Riyad Mansour, the Palestinian UN envoy, said on Monday that his and other UN delegations have yet to persuade Washington to support the resolution, but they will keep trying. The initial draft resolution, the brainchild of more than a dozen countries, which condemns and calls for a halt to all West Bank settlements, was delivered to the 15-nation UN Security Council in December. We are in touch with the Americans, Mansour told Reuters. All members of the Security Council are in touch with the Americans, and even leaders at a higher level from our side, from Europeans and from others, end quote. He said it was possible the draft resolution could be finalized this week for vote as early as next week. That's if Obama is willing. And that's not likely, particularly given the sentiment of Congress, which I reported to you in my last program, when it hurried through a resolution unanimously passed by a voice vote telling the president what to do when it came to a UN vote. Here's how Haaretz political correspondent Akiva Eldor described it. Quote, House Foreign Affairs Committee, Howard Berman, this Jewish Democrat from California, with the help of Jewish representatives Gary Ackerman, Elliot Engel, and Shelley Berkeley, got a resolution passed which demands that the administration veto any proposal at the UN Security Council to recognize a Palestinian state that is not the result of an agreement with Israel. The resolution, Eldar goes on, cobbled together the offices of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, reproaches the Palestinians for their refusal to return to negotiations and demands that they cease efforts to gain recognition from other countries. There is not a single word about Israel's refusal to freeze the settlements during the negotiations and nothing about Netanyahu's evasiveness in putting forward his position on the issue of permanent borders. The initiative in the House does not stem from ideological motives or a political worldview, writes Elder. These are not members of the messianic right wing who believe that the entire land of Israel belongs only to the nation of Israel and who support the expansion of settlements. Last January, he notes, Berman accepted an invitation to speak before the Forum of Friends of Peace Now in the United States and praised the reliable information on the settlements the organization has provided him. The veteran congressman warned at the time that if Israel continues to usurp territory, it will lose its Jewish image or cease being a democracy. The dominant view among the centrist group of the Jewish community, Elder went on, that we support every Israeli government, right or wrong, reminds one of a situation in which a parent finds out that his child is addicted to drugs and hands him his credit card. End quote. That's Akiva Eldar, the political correspondent of Haaretz. The report of the vote did not make it to the New York Times. Congress is the parent that Eldar was talking about. It might be something to ask Representative Mike Thompson about when he speaks tomorrow and meets the public between 10 and 11 a.m. at the Ukiah Conference Center in the Chenin Blanc Room, 100 School Street in downtown Ukiah.